I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com and founder of One Life Tools. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, Canada's unique podcast conversation that enriches lives, empowers careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, telling your brand story on LinkedIn so it's compelling and fascinating. Leslie Hughes is a LinkedIn optimization specialist and profile writer, speaker, and professor of social media. She's worked in both sales and marketing and web strategy. She's worked in traditional media and online marketing for 20 years with brands such as Visa Canada, Prozac, and award-winning publications Wedding Bells and Fashion Magazines. Leslie, thanks so much for driving all the way in today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So Leslie, let's talk about just being visible in the online world, right? Just to orient listeners, I mean, most people are familiar with social media. Not that many are figuring out how to own their brand. What should people be aware of? What are the first and most important things to consider when thinking about simply being visible online?
This is a big part of what I teach at the college, and with when I go out and do corporate training or keynote speaking, is what is your first online impression? And so my students are actually required to do a digital audit, like an audit on their digital presence, because oftentimes people haven't really taken the time to look at themselves from the perspective of a recruiter or a hiring manager, or if you're in business, from your potential target audience's perspective, to really identify what is your first impression and is it a good one?
All right. So then we find, oh, gee, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, I'm on somewhere. You find out where you're on, right, because you do all of that stuff. And then let's say people want to take control and they want to start to shape that. Not everybody wants to shape it for job search. So we'll come to that, especially for those who are in transition and how can they optimize things for job search. But let's say you're employed right now. Let's say you're not even working at job change, but you're just working, doing stuff. So what's the bare minimum? What should we do after we do the audit and we figure, okay, here's what's what? What's the next step?
A lot of it depends on who the target audience is. So if someone's in transit, I mean, LinkedIn is, you know, it's the business network. It's not the sexy one. It's not the one that everyone gleefully goes on in the morning and says, oh, I can't wait to get on this channel. It's the one, it's the site where we're investing time and not wasting time. And so from the very first steps, I always say, if you do nothing else on your LinkedIn profile, focus on a really strong headshot that really identifies you as confident, smiling, approachable. There's a lot of do not do's in your headshot, but really make sure that it looks really good, that you make a great first impression. The second step is to make sure that you have a headline that doesn't just assign what your current title is. Ideally, you have 120 characters to really tell out your story. And then the last step is really spending time on your LinkedIn summary. And the summary is the most powerful part of LinkedIn, wherein you have 2,000 characters to effectively tell your story. And telling your story insofar as, who are you? How do you help your target audience? And most importantly, which I see missed on so many LinkedIn profiles, is what's the call to action at the bottom? How do you want people to take the next step to get in touch with you?
Great. So let's come back to the headline. The headshot, I think, is important, and everybody should get a really good headshot.
Oh, you have no idea how many poor ones
I see. There's crappy ones out there.
Oh, my word. There's some with it. I say, you know, wearing clothes is actually mandatory. I've seen like men topless, you know, like men without shirts on and cat pictures and
all right, everybody,
so
fix that
ones.
Headshot right away. Okay, so you've done that. Now let's come back to the headline, because a lot of people are wondering about that, and so many people still simply put their job title, right?
Yeah. What's
so
the, it's
I'm
the
a community manager at the ABC Corporation. So what's the alternative? How should you think about that? You only have so many characters, you know, and you want to come up with something that's punchy. And again, before we go to the I want to get found by recruiters, because maybe that's a special optimization technique, but let's say you're just working, but you don't necessarily want to use your job title. What should you do?
So the job title, when you set up your LinkedIn account, the job title is sort of a default. That's what sort of pops up into that field. And typically, I probably have it in a blog post somewhere, but I typically, when I go through the presentation, provide a formula. And usually it's, you know, your title or the organization you're working for, helping blank with, you know, delivering these results. So again, you only have 120 characters. And so if you can sort of identify, again, what your niche is, what you, how you specialize, so that's another sort of headline formula, is specializing in blank for whichever target audience you work with.
So an example, like what do you say on your headline?
See, my headline, I don't even follow my own formula because I wear so many hats. Mine are keyword focused. So I start with LinkedIn optimization specialist is what I lead with because I that's what I want to be known for. So it's, again, that brand association, the keywords of making sure that right out of the gate, people associate me with LinkedIn, even though I can teach all sorts of different social channels.
Great. Yeah. So there's all kinds of stuff. We talked about the headline, the picture, the headline, and the summary. Now, there's all kinds of other parts of the LinkedIn profile, and so many people think, oh, it's just my resume, right? So just give us a little primer on the distinction between my resume and my LinkedIn profile, especially the list of jobs and so on.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a huge misunderstanding that LinkedIn is your resume. It's actually a huge opportunity to really construct an elevator pitch. It's more friendly. So when I tell people to write their LinkedIn profile, or even when I write them for, because I write them for executives as well, I write them in first person. And start out with, I don't know if you've ever...
First person meaning I am this, instead of Leslie Hughes is an optimization specialist. So just, you want to start it more personally.
Yeah, better. It's better for the reader to have that connection. So what I'd like to say is that marketing is sort of benevolent manipulation. And so when we think about what do we want the reader to do, we have to write for the reader as opposed to writing for ourselves. The summary is a great place to start with writing about I believe, I'm really passionate about, and often in my classes I make the students watch Simon Sinek's Start With Why. It's an amazing TED Talk about that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And so framing your story in why you do what you do, and people buy because of a gut feeling. They buy because they really, something about that other person resonates with them. So writing that story from that perspective is important, recognizing too that you are selling, whether you're working for an organization, whether you're in transition, whether you're looking for a job, you're selling yourself, right? You're selling who you are. So focusing on that aspect. And then, depending on where your strengths lie, if you've won awards, that you can move some of those, you can toggle some of those fields higher.
So some of those fields, right, in addition to your work experience, you have things like awards, you have volunteer gigs, you have projects. So what about those other things? Where should they be positioned relative to your work history?
I think when I look at it, what is the most powerful aspect of it? So if someone has very little work experience, then I focus on the volunteer. So what have they done? So I would bump that area up a little bit higher. If they've won awards, that goes higher. For me, it's probably, I use the projects area as where I do a lot of my speaking. So I showcase all those. Now, LinkedIn is the place where you're supposed to let yourself shine. And that's the biggest aha that I've had over the past little while is very, very few people are comfortable talking about themselves. They're very, very uncomfortable with allowing themselves to be in the spotlight. And that includes some very high senior executives that I talk to about their brand. And so, yeah, so it's, I just want to sort of capture that as like everyone feels the same way. No one wants to feel like they're bragging. No one wants to feel like they're, oh, if I put on that I've won a certain award, then aren't I going to look like a jerk?
So, Leslie, what about conversing using LinkedIn? So we're creating a profile. That's fine and dandy. That's static, right? And now we can share, we can post, that we can go on groups. So let's say we've got a decent profile. What is the best way to use it in some kind of practical and interactive way?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misconceptions that particularly brands have, they don't put the social into social media. And that is one of my biggest frustrations, that social is about interactivity, and that's where the conversation, the conversing part comes into it. So there's a few different, and I don't want to sort of go down a rabbit hole of going too far because I can talk, but one of the important aspects of it is that you can reach out to make connections that basically are assembled into your online Rolodex that go with you for your entire life. And so there are certain etiquette to making those connections. There's some etiquette that we can go through.
So when you're sending out a LinkedIn invite, there's the standard one that comes with the system. Should people customize? And if so, how?
I believe they should always customize it. Sadly, though, the LinkedIn infrastructure doesn't allow you to always customize it. But if I send a connection request and I'm not able to customize it, I usually try to follow up with some sort of email to sort of qualify how do I know this person, or why do I want to get in touch with them. I think that personalized connection request is one of the most important parts of making those connections.
Awesome. We do have a caller who's just called in with us.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Really enjoy the show.
And sure thing.
Donor and supporter of the show. Just very quickly, LinkedIn is a very complicated platform in my experience. I'm just curious as to Leslie's take on getting involved in content leadership or content marketing by joining groups, you know, providing, you know, long form content and then boosting that content through advertising on LinkedIn. What's your take on that, Leslie?
It's one of the underutilized and most powerful aspects, I think, of building thought leadership, because I think what happens is a lot of people feel like, well, why is anybody going to listen to me? Who cares about what I have to say? And so to your point, it's a really, really powerful place for you to blog on there, to really create thought leadership and to extend your brand awareness, because we all are brands at the end of the day. And so one of the posts that I had written really early on received over 12,000 views. So you just never know what's going to be picked up by Pulse. Again, it's important to tailor that content for the reader. Who's the target audience and why are you sharing that information?
So, and you just mentioned Pulse, right? So that's something that people might not be familiar with.
So Pulse is the LinkedIn's proprietary sort of content. I guess it's a content aggregator is the best way to sort of explain it. It's their own new sort of news source. And so at the time when that was picked up, it was, Pulse was providing that content within the feed, people's feeds. So that's why it was able to be seen by over 13,000 people.
And that was their choice. Like, you can't get yourself picked up by Pulse.
No,
you just got to like cross your fingers.
Yeah, it's an editorial sort of decision by LinkedIn. So I just think there's very few people that are actually on any social channel. There's very few people actually creating content. So there's a huge opportunity for people to dominate as thought leaders. And, you know, as the caller said, you know, use that to, you know, generate more awareness through disseminating that and driving people back to your LinkedIn profile.
So, Leslie, just let's go over for a moment to people who are in job search mode. They're in transition right now, and they want to figure out how to optimize their profile, get found by recruiters, get found by employers. What should people know?
A lot of times it is by keyword. So when I write, I usually write for the reader and then try to assemble some of the keywords that somebody might be looking for. And some of those keywords may be a little bit redundant, right? So marketing strategist, digital strategist. For me, they say the same thing, social media, marketing, all those kinds of things. They may seem redundant, but I do try to reframe some of the content so that I'm actually capturing some of those. But again, I write for the reader first and less likely to write for the keywords. But again, it's getting them to the same side of the table, getting into the mindset of the recruiter. What is the recruiter looking for? And if you have a dream job that you really, really want, look at the job description and see if you can't mirror that exact same language. I mean, not word for word, but
yeah, that's great advice. We always share that advice at Career Cycles. That's key.
Yeah.
Right. So half of your answer is right there in the job posting. Use those words. So
yeah.
Let's say people find a job posting on LinkedIn itself, right? Because there are jobs posted there now, and you can either apply with your LinkedIn profile or you can attach a separate customized application and resume. What's the best thing to do?
Depends on the requirement. So it depends on how they want the information, because certain recruiters are going to want a flat resume that is bullet points and right to the point and cold. Other people are going to say, hey, please, you know, upload your stuff through LinkedIn. We want your profile done through LinkedIn. So it's ideal to have both, have a printed copy of your resume and make sure that your LinkedIn profile doesn't have to be word for word is the same as your resume, but it should be very similar. And you want to make sure that it sort of lines up. You don't want to have any sort of discrepancies.
Shouldn't it be less? I mean, resumes, you know, you see sometimes they're densely packed, and in Canada, people often have a 2-page resume.
Yes.
So if you wanted to replicate that, you're going to have a lot of words on your LinkedIn profile. People don't seem to have the patience for that.
Well, that's a question I get all the time. I mean, I'm kind of wordy as you can tell. I like to talk. So I stuff as much as I possibly can into my LinkedIn profile, because from what I've studied, and I don't have the statistic at the top of my head, but long copy outperforms short copy, which is so counterintuitive in this day and age with the web that we think, well, everyone just skims. I think what's important to recognize, and I see the statistic is as high as 94% of people Google before they pick up the phone or before they email. So having more content in there actually helps to answer those questions before someone has to pick up the phone.
Wow, that is counterintuitive. So let's put more rather than less, because people will find you and they'll react to your content.
As long as it matters. So don't just stuff in there because it's, I want it to make it look bigger. It has to be quality, because I'm a huge stickler on quality over quantity anytime.
That resume hopefully is quality resume, because you've looked at it 100 times and you've had other people look at it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about upgrading, right? LinkedIn wants you to spend money, of course. And if you do spend money, I'm impressed with some of the things that you can do. And you can, for instance, contact people for a mere $35 or $40 or whatever it is a month. You can actually boost your job search abilities by contacting all kinds of hiring managers. So should people spend the money if they're in job search mode? And if they invest, what's the best thing to do with that investment?
Some of the premium accounts, I mean, some of them are expensive. So there's about four different levels of the premium accounts. And so for the job, that's the one I think that you're referring to. My recommendation is always get your LinkedIn profile up to speed. Make sure that it's top notch before you invest in the premium account. The premium account is free for a full month, but it has so much great information. I've seen the back end of it where, again, you can boost your ranking so that you sort of surface at the top so that you're one of the first impressions that recruiter is going to see. Number two, you get to see the skills that are married with the profile. So what skills are they looking for, and do you have that in your profile? And then one of the other aspects is the range of the salary, so you get a lot of great information.
We're almost out of time. We could probably talk a lot more, and I'm sure there's other comments or questions, but just to come back into the personal here, Leslie, for a moment before we wrap up, you've had all these twists and turns in your own career story, personal and professional. What's one thing you can share with listeners about something you've learned about making good choices, career and life choices?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually in the process. It's going to be really, really soon that I'm launching a book, because the biggest aha that I've received, again, is that people need to own their value. They really, and I think, I'm afraid to say, I think it's Canadians are a little bit more bashful, but it's really, really important that we own our value and get out of our own way.
Right on. If people want to find out more, how do they do that, Leslie?
They can reach me. My website is punchmedia.ca, and if anybody wants to reach out and email me, I'm happy to answer questions. I love LinkedIn. I love helping people. So yeah, I guess punchmedia.ca is probably the best way to reach me.
Right on. Leslie Hughes, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Franklin, and you're listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Career Buzz is brought to you by Career Cycles. Take inspired action toward making well-informed career and life choices. Go to careercycles.com to learn about professional one-on-one career management programs using a story listening approach to career counseling. If you're a helping professional looking to scale up career management, visit onelifetools.com to learn about the Who You Are Matters game and online storyteller. Denise has been doing research and work in the new retirement, and she had explored the career options and the career possibilities for people who are 70 plus in age. Denise, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
So, Denise, I saw you here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. Mm-hmm. You had a really nice poster all about people who are 70 plus, I believe, who were working. So how did this research and how did this study come about?
Since I'm a boomer, and since the recession that we had, I've noticed that people are continuing to work. Rather than just pick the traditional retirement age of 62 or 65, I wanted to look at those individuals that are over that traditional retirement age that are still working. And one was someone that worked with me, and she was like the Energizer Bunny in the office. I would see her, she would get more done than the 20-year-olds, and she was happy. So then I started to think, there's got to be something to this. And then with the recession, people would say, well, people are still working because they need the money. I didn't think that it was the money. I thought it was other things like social connection, meaning, purpose, their overall well-being, having a routine. So I came up with a series of questions, qualitative questions, where I could sit down and talk to an individual and pull out of them why they still do work.
So what did we find? I think you interviewed, what, a dozen or so
Yes.
people, 70 plus. So why do those people continue to work after 70?
One of the reasons that we sort of stumbled on is people have a fear, I think, of losing their mind, not being as active mentally. That's one reason. But the real reason is having a place to go, having people to interact with, knowing at the end of the day that you've accomplished something, just a variety of things because they can do it. I asked them, what advice would you give other people who are thinking about retiring? And they said, don't do it. Take your job that you have, try to recreate it, work fewer hours. And that's what a lot of these individuals are doing. They're not working 50, 60 hours a week. They're working 25 hours a week. They're still contributing to society. They're productive. So it's good for them and it's good for the community as well. I think they have the best of both worlds. For most of these individuals, the money was nice. It was the icing on top of the cake, so to speak, but that wasn't the primary reason. It's because their work environment was a good environment. They have good friends at work. They're respected and they're valued for their contribution.
So, Denise, I'm just thinking about this word retirement, and you said that some of your interviewees said, don't do it.
That's right.
But it does seem that, you know, some companies will formally end a kind of fixed work schedule, maybe not the entrepreneurs, but many people who work in organizations. And then there is that transition to what am I going to do next? Some may be able to consult with their companies and spend
Yes.
2 or 3 days a week doing that. But what about those who can't? How to think when and how to think about that transition?
I think it's never too early, too soon to start thinking about it. But I would say, you know, you're in your 50s, start thinking about, what am I going to do 10 years from now, 15 years from now? If I could design my life and make it exactly the way that I want to make it, how would I make it? I would approach my employer, see if there's a position where I could cut back my hours, or I could look at my skill sets, assess them, and see if I could transfer those skills into something else. For example, say you're a human resources executive. And you don't want to do that anymore, you can't do that anymore. Well, why couldn't you teach that at a local university? Because there are life experiences that older individuals have that they could share with young workers.
And if people want to find out more, Denise, how do they do that?
They can contact me at DS Raposa. That's D like Denise, S like Sam, R-A, P like Peter, O-S-A, at cox.net.
Great. Denise Raposa, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Find us on iTunes or visit careercycles.com/radio to subscribe and download past episodes. Get inspiring career stories full of twists and turns, actionable ideas from career experts, and new ideas to empower your own career in life.